ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy, and everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. This show is the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go frickin' nuts. My very special guests, plural today, is Nick, otherwise known as Sonic, and Lana Lochte from Red Ice Radio. So everybody, welcome.
Hello.
Can we hear you? Oh, yes, we can.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Excellent.
Oh, that makes me feel so much better. I'd better have like heart palpitations and such, because over the last week, guys, AFR's been having some real bad Skype troubles. But they had somebody from AT-AT, you know, the Star Wars snow assault walkers. Come in and take a look at the thing. Or maybe it's AT&T. I can't remember exactly the thing here. But yeah, it's all sorted now. Thank goodness. And nobody got shot with laser beams.
It's better than being on the phone. It's a bit clearer, maybe.
Yeah. Well, isn't that interesting that Skype had traditionally had a reputation of being laggy or terrible or whatever, and people began to realize relatively early on, especially in alternative radio, that it becomes one of the prime alternatives because you're capable of plugging in different microphones and things of that nature to get an even higher quality audio stream, much higher than the average phone conversation that you would have. So thank goodness it's back. That's all I'll say.
That's right. It's
okay.
Nice and clear.
Mm-hmm. So, Lana, if you would introduce yourself and let us know a little bit about who you are, what you do, plug your websites and such, I'd be much obliged.
Well, my name is Lana, and currently I'm at Red Ice Radio. I help out my husband, Henrik, and I've been doing that for about 4 years. Prior to that, I worked in music, I worked in film. I also have a band called 30 Day Notice, which is my brother and I. And I have a radio show called Radio 314, which is fairly new. But it's going pretty well.
And Nick?
Well, I run Type 1 Radio, which was set up through the Friends of Freeman Network. They're called the Friendship Agenda. And it was really to just... There were so many creative people on the site that I thought... It was a good idea to give everybody a voice that wanted it. And so we've got a little core collective of people on there. So we've got Retta. She does a Thursday night show all about astral projections. And she's had some quite good guests on, such as George Lobono. He was just on recently. And then Friday, we are honoured to have on Type 1 Radio a Swami Shivanandaguri, who's presented a Freighter show a couple of times, and he does very, very interesting meditation show. And then Saturday nights, me and a couple of other people in Brighton, who we met through the Friends of Freeman, which is just crazy because they live... literally a mile away from me. We did the Saturday Night Show with a bunch of other people on around the Friendship Agenda. And we seem to be doing quite well. We've had lots of interesting guests on and met a whole load of very, very interesting people. We had Ben Stewart come over the end of last summer, and it just coincided with Max Egan being here as well. So that was just a great convergence of very, very cool people. So, yeah, it's been very fun. Great journey so far.
It becomes a lot easier once you realise you're doing the right thing.
Definitely. And it's quite interesting how just synchronicities lead you to you know, the next, you know, another person, and then that'll just link you to so many other people.
And it seems like everyone has an alternative talk show now, but that's great, right? The more out there, the better the chances of being heard. So,
yeah, definitely. Power to the people.
Yeah, the more the merrier. And there's something you said, Nick, about giving people a voice. And that's basically what I try to do with this show. You know, it's just every guest that we have on, I've done no research. I'm sorry. I've got so much other stuff to do. You already know who you are, so you can explain it. So, you know, there's no need to research other than ask you who you are and what you do. And the great thing about it is, of course, hey, you get to meet so many really cool, interesting people.
That's
and
right.
You'd be surprised how many cool, interesting people also know other cool, interesting people.
It seems like all the cool people never go out, so you can just meet them online now.
Yeah. And I think that's because they know that if you would go down to the bar and the local thing, the chances of you running into somebody as cool as us and having a mean conversation that we would have right here is pretty frickin' slim, Jack.
That's true. I can't do it anymore. Me in a bar, forget about it.
Yeah. My sister doesn't like sport very much, and she said if I was ever going to sit around and watch men struggle to score for over an hour, I'd just go to a bar.
Well, we've got a very we're fortunate to have a very interesting and collective place just outside of Brighton, where it's called Zoo, and they just get speakers to come in, and they have party nights, and it's a great place, you know. So when Ben Stewart came over, we got him talking there, and that was just a packed. It's like in a big warehouse, so the speaking area is upstairs with bean bags everywhere. Very, very chilled out, and that was really cool. And as well with Max Egan, he did a very interesting talk about his, because at the time he was on a world trip, he just got back from Gaza with Ken O'Keefe, if any of you know Ken. Ken will be on a special Taiwan lounge next Tuesday, because he just got back from Iran. So, Max was talking a lot about his experience in Gaza and the atrocities going on there. It's all good.
Right. Now, putting it into a direction that we all know and love. Have you noticed that the news no longer matters, and the more you try to keep up with it, the more paranoid you become?
Sometimes I find that I take it in. I kind of view it like I'm viewing a movie anymore, and I can step away from it and laugh at it in a different way. So I'm beyond the paranoia part. I feel like if it's going to happen, let it happen. I'll deal with it when it happens.
Well, I'm also just concerned, like, I used to do that back in the day, you know, always listening to the radio, watching the news, and reading all these articles and this kind of stuff. What I was doing is I was just filling my head full of other people's thoughts,
right.
And as a result, I abdicated my own ability to think, and as soon as I stepped away from it and just go, hey, what do I actually really think about all this kind of stuff, that's when things started to become very clear about what my purpose and mission is in life. And I think that's kind of a microcosm for how maybe a good section of the truth movement are currently living their lives. They're living their lives vicariously through the commentators on the radio and the YouTube videos, as if that's contributing.
Absolutely. And I also see people defending these people and getting in these fights online, and they've never actually met some of these researchers or people face to face, so they actually don't even know who they are, but they're really defensive of them. I notice a lot of unkindness. It really shocks me at the lack of kindness, as well as the skill to engage in a civil, healthy debate where if ideas aren't agreed upon, that's okay. You know, we can scrutinize and test our own philosophies, see how they hold up. That's part of being awake and aware, isn't it?
Whereas the problem is the reason why we're doing all of this is because we want to break away from the whole slave-slave-master relationship. And in a lot of ways, we're simply creating a new slave-slave-master relationship, whereas I'm the master, I'm the authority of information. You must believe me and defend me and attack my enemies and such.
Yeah, and then there's those who also, I don't know if you get this, that write and we demand to know the truth. You must give us the truth. Like we have the truth, or we're obligated to do that for someone. That's your own personal path.
Yeah. Show us the money, yo. I mean, are you paying me, man?
Let me tell you, it seems like the truth fascists and dictators are out. I don't understand why people can't just let people do what they want to do and have their beliefs and be respectful of that and not have to attack people if they think a little differently. Or if, for instance, Vinny, it's your show. If someone doesn't like something that you say or do, they can go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yesterday we were talking with the guest and she said something along the lines of the reason why you don't have your own thoughts in order is because you keep on listening to other people's thoughts on the radio and things like that. You're never really actually going out there and doing anything about it. You're just listening and listening to endless information that is still irrelevant. And I was just like, yep, that's absolutely right. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to figure out how to think, stop listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. And if somebody were to actually just stop listening to this show, go out, ambush a scumbag with a camera, start their own YouTube channel, and actually start doing their own investigations, their own research, I would prefer to have no listeners and have like a million former listeners or something like that who have all got their own shows and YouTube channels and stuff like that. That would actually be preferable to me because it means that I'm not the one doing all the work. But that's looking at me like I'm something huge, which I'm not. I'm basically nothing, you know, blip on the radar, a flea on an elephant's ass. But it doesn't matter.
But wouldn't you prefer to have all those people not be living in the system that is apparent to us now and rather out growing their own food? Wouldn't that be
well,
a
that
better?
Too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, take action in whatever way you can, basically. You know, if you ain't got no legs, don't take action by doing a run for charity.
How about working on becoming an individual and not caring about the collective so much? I noticed that also within alternative media, there's a lot of socialists and metaphysical commies, as I like to call them. It's like, stop worrying about what everyone else is doing and just do what you want to do. Break away. We don't all have to be one together and hold hands and sing kumbaya all the time.
Well, see, and the fact of the matter is, we're not. Never
right.
have been. Quite conceivably never will be that way. And as far as I know, there's been a lot of experiments in communism. As far as I know, they haven't been worked out too well for the people who got exterminated.
That's right.
And have you noticed that that's what people do a lot of the time, like, as soon as a reality disappears, like so let's say hardcore communism in, say, Russia and the Cold War, that disappears. So now people don't realize that how bad it was, and now they start to think that it's a good idea again.
That's right. It's coming around, and it's there and with the Occupy movement, and it's completely ridiculous because government is responsible for creating all the problems, and yet they're going to them, and now they want bigger government. These people haven't really done any of their homework.
With the Occupy
so dangerous.
Movement, I think that I just hear that it's occupying, it's there to occupy our minds, you know, it's to get people out of not looking at the real stuff that's going on.
That's right, which is why in New Zealand, here in Auckland, I wanted to create a new movement called Pre-Occupy Auckland and encourage them to ignore all political issues. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream. just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TVI brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests from the European FEMA regions. Sonic from the Uber Kingdom, and I believe Lana Lorkoff. Now, Lana, is it a bit of an invasion of your privacy to ask what country you're currently in?
No, currently I'm actually in the States. I needed a little break from Sweden, so.
Okay, all right. Well, that's not a problem then. Heinrich's not in the States with you, is he?
We go back and forth, so yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right, that's cool. I didn't know Heinrich was a frequenter to the TSA.
Actually, they leave him alone, so he does okay.
They do?
They've been pretty nice to him, yeah.
All right.
No, excellent. They've been pretty... I haven't been frisked or anything either. I just kind of go through with the attitude of like, ah, you don't exist, and then it turns out okay.
Turns out they don't.
Let's get them.
Hey, there's a FEMA evacuation plan for you. Pretend it doesn't exist.
Never know. I guess we'll have to find out.
Yeah.
If it happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's something like targeting, really, you know, or at least this is what I've been led to believe about airport security and all of that. They just target people, young kids, old women, very sexy girls, etc. And the rest of us, yeah, don't really care. Walk on through. Man, that guy's got an enormous bulge in his pants. Don't worry, bro. It's probably just a mini nuke. It's all good.
They also like to bug people who opt out of going through the scanners. Then they will take their sweet time.
Oh, yeah. So you've gone through the scanners?
No, I opt out. You know, people have to know their rights. They think that they have to do these things. It's like vaccines, you know, they think they have to do it. But no, you have rights and you need to say no. The more people that say no, the better it's going to get. But people willingly do it.
This goes back to our collectivism sort of spiel that we were rattling off for in the first segment, is that, you know, mass demonstration and things like that occasionally does work.
Sure.
But on the other hand, how many protests have I been to? Shockingly large amounts. I don't know. I think I've got maybe 7 or 8, like 2 terabyte hard drives or something lying around the place. They're just full of footage that I've taken from all these different protests and public meetings and stuff that I've been to, right? And you know what any of these protests have accomplished? In fact, you know what every single one of these protests has accomplished? Nothing.
That's right.
Absolutely nothing.
And you can protest. You can protest in different ways. It doesn't mean having a sign and going out and being visible. Here I am, you know.
Yeah, I think it's more less about protest and more about demonstration. So you know, your demonstration through your actions that you're not going to be party to whatever it is that you're. The protesting against, by protesting, it creates the dichotomy, doesn't it? That there's a pro and against, so opposites. You know, when really we should just let everybody get on with what they're doing.
Mm. Well, see, I always found the irony of protesting is that you go down central city streets. So let me get this straight. You're deploring capitalism
whilst walking down the central business district and disrupting the businesses of the people who would probably support you if you weren't disrupting their businesses.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. I don't know.
If
protesting changed anything, it'd be made illegal. In China, they don't even allow it at all, basically.
In fact, I was at a protest here not too long ago. I think it might have been just late last year. And a Chinese lady came up to me and she said, what's going on here? What are all these people doing in the middle of the street with all these signs and stuff? And I said, it's a protest. And she,
what? What's a protest? You didn't even know what a protest was. Like, literally. That was shocking to me.
Yeah, what town was that?
that was in Auckland City. Wow. But this lady had just come over to New Zealand to have a bit of a holiday kind of thing. And this is the first protest she'd ever seen in her life. She'd been living in China her whole life.
What kills me, though, is that people have this whole notion about we need government. They're clinging on to this government dream, this hope of a utopia that is just never going to happen. So people are so brainwashed into what is authority and what is law, and these people are going to make a difference for us. And if that just went away, if people could deprogram from that and start doing their own thing, I think the world would actually be better off, because people say, oh no, then we'll have total anarchy. They have it all wrong. The government, they are the anarchists who are causing trouble and doing whatever they want and stomping all over the people. See what I'm saying?
They are the Commander Chaos.
Yeah.
And it's just, the government's really responsible for so many bad things. But the problem is, we're the ones who are responsible for whether or not that government still continuously exists. And furthermore, the problem onto that, one person can make a difference, yet you will be attacked, demonized, destroyed if you start making a difference. I don't know. It's a complicated situation, because on the one hand, you want the individual to be all-powerful, you know. I'm my own master. Nobody else can tell me or compel me to do anything unless I actually agree with them, you know. It's the force of persuasion. We don't have that currently, right? So in order to transition safely from a communist, banker-controlled New World Order into a individually regulated self-governance model, there's going to be there's going to be a lot of eggs broken in making that omelet, I believe, and I think there's a lot of eggs being cracked right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I want to save those people. I want to help those people, you know, because if you've got somebody who's actually getting into court, I don't know if you've ever been to court, but frack, it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
And actually doing the documents and all of that sort of stuff, arresting judges, so on and so forth. They'll never get any mainstream media coverage, and if they do, it's very short-lived. And if it's short-lived, it'll probably be a soundbite, or what I like to call an audio nibble. So it's like pointless, you know? Even if you do accomplish great things and they really do mean something, if nobody hears about it, you know, it's like if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody around to hear it. If you expose a scumbag and nobody ever sees the video because you never even bothered to put it up on YouTube, did you even expose them at all? And
yeah.
That's what I like to do. And in fact, that's what we all really are kind of doing, is giving coverage to those people who actually deserve it. The real freaking issues. You know, we're not talking about Kim Kardashian's ass here.
But people love to hear about her ass, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah, disappointing, isn't it, in society when X Factor and Britain's Got Talent and Strictly Come Dancing, you know, that's what people are tweeting about. You know, sad state of affairs, but sure they'll wake up at some point.
Well, you know, I don't know if anything's, there's nothing for sure in this world. You know, you never be assured that everybody's going to wake up. You can never be assured that everybody's going to stay asleep.
You never get to be assured that people want to wake up.
And maybe not everyone came here to wake up. Maybe we all have different purposes. I mean, the parasite and the termite even have a role to play in nature. So there's a lot of those around in human form.
Parasitical termitological.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They're actually creating diversification, ultimately speciation, you know, an evolutionary process by which new biological species arise. So they play a role.
Well, that's another thing as well, like the whole transhumanist agenda. And I don't know if you've seen the film Prometheus, but I get this concept from the film that, oh, human beings are basically just a mistake, right? A complete failure of the engineers to create a perfect system of life. And they balls it up, so they're like, okay, well, bugger it, we're going to have to go back and wipe out our creation because we can. And that's kind of like how the whole human race is actually really governed at the moment, I think, by the elite, is they reckon they created this society, hence they created us, hence they own us, hence they can kill us if they want.
Yeah,
and the whole ownership over human life thing is really, really scary, like the patenting of human genomes and all of this other stuff. We're getting to a point in technology now where the basic things that bind us together, common humanity, morality, brotherhood, sisterhood, etc., whatever, family connections, are waning so much in favor of being replaced by these other things that don't mean anything, you know? Like you really pointed out some of the main problems with our society with X Factor, Britain's Got Talent, or American Idol, etc. We've got all these same variants over here. And in fact, New Zealand made the first American Idol type thing come into existence. It was a TV series called Pop Stars, where they got a whole bunch of girls together and created a girl pop group. You're right. And I am really, really, really ashamed as a New Zealander to know that we unleashed this fracking plague upon the earth.
We had that over here, Pop Stars, and that's how girls allowed. I don't know whether you've heard of those. That's how they spawned.
No, I haven't heard of them. Thank goodness.
They're like a shiny version of the Spice Girls.
Well, it's because of who's running entertainment. You know, when I worked in LA, I used to see a lot of good scripts come through, music as well, but people would always turn it down. No, no, no. And there's very few gatekeepers that are actually in control of entertainment and media. And I think they're purposefully wanting to dumb people down. So they do that with intention. And I always complained. They'll always say, well, that's not commercial. We can't play this song or this movie. It's not commercial. I'm like, you make it, and then people will like it. They'll want to see it, and it will become the new mainstream. But apparently that's not a concept they understood.
Yeah, maybe. I sort of found that going to the Amsterdam dance conferences, where the music was just, it was all commoditized. And they were just talking about units and it sort of really got away from the essence and the life in the music itself. And of course, because it was Holland, there was a lot of really hard techno going on, which from my point of view, trying to sell a lot of really ambient stuff, which I was doing at the time. Didn't really go down.
Yeah, well, who did I have on? I had a guest on a couple of weeks ago. I forget his name now, but he said the music business is not about the music. It's about business. And it's very, very easy to see that when you think about it. I've looked on YouTube and seen these amazing singers and songwriters and bands and things like that who, with zero support, have made their own songs, published their own works and things of that nature. Not because they ain't any good, but because they're actually so much better than the commercial trash that we know and love that they will never, ever get a record contract. Either because the record contract people don't like real good music anymore or real messages, or because that person doesn't want to associate with a scumbaggery record company. And so a new industry is now evolving of self-created, self-perpetuating music creation. And I think that with the advent of RED cameras and other cheaper forms of cinematic technology, I think we're actually going to see a high-quality independent film, independent music, independent books, etc. type of industry being created, not in spite of the fact that commercialism is taking over and destroying the creativity within society, but actually because of that fact. The industry is, in fact, its own worst enemy, because when people don't like it anymore and they see no alternative, it forces them to create one. Not entirely dissimilar to how the truth movement has evolved out of the lie movement. Believe us, we're politicians. You can't be really kidding me. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Lana Lochteff from Red Ice Radio and Sonic from the Type 1 Radio Lounge. Back in a minute at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Bathing in the blood of many, many small children to keep ourselves nice and healthy and young, just like the pharaohs used to do. Welcome back.
All right. And my very special guests, Sonic and Lana Lochteff. Now, is it Lochteff? L-O-K-T-E-F.
Lochteff. Yeah, that's right. It's Russian.
Oh,
it's Russian.
Lana Lochteva, actually.
Lana Lochteva.
That's right. But no one ever can say it in America, so.
Yeah, that's the thing that I did notice about America is that it becomes, if you've got a really large country that has almost everything in it, you don't really feel like looking outside of it, and you don't watch a whole lot of foreign TV shows. As a result, you don't become familiar with foreign culture. You don't become familiar with foreign linguistics. You don't become familiar with anything foreign at all. So when anybody comes in with anything that isn't, you know, true blue American, you're like, what?
And it's so weird because we're a melting pot. I mean, people from all over the world came here in the beginning. So it's strange.
Yeah, it is odd.
And I think that it should be really required reading or listening or whatever for people to actually watch, say, British comedy. Or Irish films or something of that nature.
Because I remember when I was a kid watching and listening to all these different accents around the world, at first I didn't quite comprehend what they were saying, but after a little bit of time, you begin to pick it up relatively easily. It's just another dialect, you know, Australian and New Zealand. In New Zealand, a pen that you write with is pronounced pen. In Australia, a pen that you write with is pronounced pen, like a pin that you pin something down with. And if you didn't know those very subtle differences, you'd be lost in the conversation. You go, what the heck is going on? And I think that's what's happening to a lot of Americans nowadays, is that they just don't know what the rest of the world is talking about. And the rest of the world sees them as very, very stupid indeed. Like there's a, and this isn't my opinion, of course. This is just what I've seen a lot of it, like racism against Americans based upon the stupidity that's been imposed on them by their education and entertainment systems. You know, that's really it.
But people also forget that there's a lot of forefront thinkers here and trendsetters and brilliant minds. And there's 300 million people here. So you have to break it down per capita. Sure, there's a lot of idiots, but there's also a lot of really brilliant people here as well. You know, I think America gets a bad rap. I mean, I'm well-traveled. I've lived in different countries. And I enjoy coming back home because I feel like people still have some fire here. They're a little more honest. They're friendly. They'll help you out when you're in a bind. And that I like. Some other countries you go to, they're very cold.
Yeah. Like Canada.
Like Sweden.
So do you speak Swedish fluently?
Nay. Just a little Swedish, you know, but Henrik's English is so good and everything we were doing was in English, so I didn't really have time to learn Swedish. And then when I went out and tried to use it, everyone wanted to practice their English. So yeah, so there you go.
Well, that's classic. And that's the other thing that I do like about America as well, is, as you mentioned, the friendliness. My God, they are the friendliest people ever. And they'll always, always, always give you some food. Like my producer's American, and he was just living not too far from me. Just until recently, he's come back home to California, and that was something that I noticed like straight off the bat. Uber friendly, and just welcome you into their house, and do you want something to eat, man? Do you want a beer? Do you want a coffee or something? You know, just always trying to give you something to make your stay more enjoyable, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's the Americans. Okay,
the other thing I have to say
is the people.
America is like 5-6 different countries, depending where you go. I mean, I'm from the West Coast, the Northwest, Portland, Seattle, you know, the grunge movement. It's very different than if you go down south or the East Coast or the Midwest. It really is different depending where you go. Everyone is not the same.
Yeah, absolutely. 50
countries, 50 separate countries, isn't it really, that are just next to each other?
Well, how do you talk to that? You know, have you ever heard of the American president say, I don't want to talk to the American people? What do you mean you talk to the American people? They're all completely different. Yeah. Most of them think you're a liar, you frack.
Yeah, they don't want states seceding. States have tried. You know, they didn't let the South. They had to come in there and cream them. You know, Texas, they won't let them do it. So it's fascism.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's
Aaron Russo was right.
You've got to get people in the know, isn't it? You've got to let them realize, hey, look, bro, you're living under fascism, okay? And it's been happening for actually quite some time. You may think you're free, but all those freedoms are getting dried up day by day. The New World Order nightmare scenario is coming into full view. It'll be at the point where it won't matter whether you close your eyes or have your eyes open. It'll still be just as bad as you can imagine everywhere you look. People got to realize this. There ain't no frickin' escape. It's a new world order. Every country is experiencing these very similar fascist government takeovers right now. Am I right?
That's right.
Yep, pretty much everywhere.
I was foolish and left to Australia thinking it was going to be better, packed everything up several years ago, went out there, and I was like, wow, it's actually worse here. And they even have a toilet tax. They have a little device that they put in your car, even though you pay taxes for the road. It's still like is connected to your bank account and just debits money right away when you go over the bridge as a toll.
Oh, that's crazy. That's properly monitored, isn't it?
Probably. I mean, and how healthy could that device be in your car? Who knows what it's emitting?
Yes, it's interesting over here. You know, 10, 15 years ago, they wanted to put black boxes into cars, and there was an outrage saying, no, the people will be tracking everybody. And then they just marketed it differently and gave people the option to buy GPS navigation systems. So they get the same thing, and they've paid for it. So, yeah.
If the slaves won't take something by force, just tell them it's good for them and that they have to pay for it, and they will.
Yeah, it's amazing.
God, we're stupid. Seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually something we've all got to be really humble about and just realize that we're all pretty freaking stupid, because we've all sat through and watched the system come in and didn't realize it for, a decade or two? I think it was alive for nearly 20 years before I figured out there was something wrong with the world, you know? That's how well it's concealed.
Yeah. I think, too, like you were saying earlier, chemtrails, there's endocrine disrupting chemicals, there's yucky food, there's Wi-Fi, all of this is having an effect on people. So they're not able to access certain parts of their brain to actually think clearly. They're kind of gone. It's like Bertrand Russell's The Impact of Science on Society. It is happening. Read that book. And it's like, we are living in that book. It's insane. He talked about altering the human race through the use of chemicals and hormones to create like a subspecies to easily control them, to kill some and then have some as slaves. I mean, I see that unfolding. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
We just had a story over here today of a major supermarket having found in their low-cost beef vet drugs, you know, like tranquilizer drugs and anesthetics and things. Nice. As well as the horse, obviously.
Jeez.
Yeah, yeah, eat this, it'll make you strong as a horse. Well, how do you know that? Well,
because it is.
It's some kind of Mayan shaman you know, sitting there in the horse meat factory just going, you know, eat this, it'll make you so much stronger. You cut out your beating heart and throw it at you. You know, as joke as I may, okay, this stuff freaks me out. Like, really does scare the living hell out of me. I can't look in any direction without seeing 100 different things wrong with this picture. Even in my very office. Looking around at all these electronic devices that I've got around me that are bathing me in radiation, or the clothes that I'm wearing, how they've got polyester in them, which upon contact with the skin freaking gives you cancer. You know, any direction you look, in any step that you take, you are surrounded 100% in a complete circumference by things that have been produced and continue to perpetuate scumbaggery.
That's right. And the so-called green movement never addresses these things. You mentioned polyester, which I'm glad you mentioned because I've also looked into that. And yet look at the fashion industry, how they're all, go green, do your part, you know, don't wash your laundry as often, take quicker showers. How about all the poison that is surrounding you? The makeup, the hairspray, the laundry detergent, you know?
It's beyond a joke, okay? Everything in this entire system is frickin' broken. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Ergo, if it is broke, frickin' fix it. But these people are so frickin' stupid that they have no clue that they're even being poisoned at all times. They're like, oh, grow organic food. It's nice and better for you. Okay, really? Okay, that's nice. What about all the pesticides? What about all this, that, and the other that everybody's having? And what about the fact that when you label organic food, it can still have about 15% cross-contamination from pesticides, herbicides, and goodness, whatever other aside? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. And my very special guest, guests. What is that, guests? Is that like a cross between guests and breasts? I think so. One of them has breasts. Sonic and Lana, look, whoa, hold on a second. There was some kind of like Russian pronunciation. It was more than Loktev, wasn't it?
Loktiva, but you could say Loktev.
I could just go look, Diva.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you find when you're trying to pronounce something that originated in another language, just try to fake the accents and it comes out sounding very similar to what it actually is.
Yeah. Just muffle your voice.
Friends, countrymen, Russians.
It works.
I assure you.
The best way to clear your throat, I found, is to say the word derivatives. And then it throws.
Derivatives. Derivatives. Mm-hmm.
Huh? You got to do it in a kind of in a deep, guttural,
a manly sort of, voice.
manly Texas voice, yeah.
Derivatives.
And, hey, the throat is clear. It's like, bam, and the dirt is gone.
Well, see, that's the benefit of pre-recording. You can just hit mute, cough, and then resume.
Yeah, it is. I always found pre-recording, there's a lot less pressure on you at the time when you're doing the recording. Yet there becomes an awful lot more work after the recording is done. Whereas with live radio, it's live radio. You know, it goes out, it's out, and there's nothing, there's bugger all you can do about it. If you mess up, you're just going to apologize and just keep on going. And you don't have to spend so much time in the editing suites and what have you. But, I mean, I've done it occasionally. Like, I remember I don't know if you've ever interviewed Lindsay Williams, but he spends a lot of time prefacing what he's saying begs the listeners to do this, that, and the other. And there'll be these bits of information in there that he's revealing for the first time. And I went through, I think, about a two-hour interview with him, trying to just get those best bits out of it without all the prefacing. And turned a two-hour interview into 23 minutes.
Wow.
You know, and that was cutting out every single every single ah, you know, just very meticulously going through it like that. And when you listen to it, it's like he's just speaking straight off the cuff and it sounds amazing. And you get just a quantitative amount of information out of there. And it becomes surprising to me just how many things that people do that with. Like, I think my friend Kath, who does this magazine here, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, she did an interview with me for an hour, and I managed to cut it down to 8 minutes, because everybody, when they're talking, they'll say the same things, just in different ways. Sort of thing. There's a lot that can be cut down if you really, really want to. In conversations, we add a lot of filler.
Sure. And something happens when you hit record. All of a sudden, you just forget everything. You might have it planned in your head one way, and it never goes out that way.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if anybody's ever been in front of a camera and try to remember lines, sometimes yep. They just go disappeared.
Yep. It's like, the pressure of that red light.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, I've got an extra camera running on me as well as the webcam today, so I'm going to do a little bit of extra editing and see how we can work that one out. But the other element is, if you're going to try and produce a higher quality product, now the technology is within your grasp in order to do it. So as far as I'm concerned, I want to be a massive media conglomerate with nothing, you know. I've already got more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald, which is our equivalent of the New York Times or Daily Telegraph in the US or UK. And I'm already making 5 days a week of radio, which very few people can do, even people who have a massive studio and are getting paid enormous, inordinate amounts of money in order to be in that studio for only a few hours a day. I'm doing it all basically for free. And so I'm doing a much better job of it than they all are.
Is there no other talk show people doing the same stuff as you in New Zealand at all?
There's my friend Vappy Kupinger, who does one night a week. My mate Wiri, who does a show on Hamilton Community Radio for about 1 hour a week. Rose down in the South Island, I think she does a day or two a week or something like that. But nobody's doing it 5 days. 5 days is really, really tough for the average normal mortal human being.
Well, but sure, because you go through... So, you go through so many moods as well. So what happens when you wake up and you just don't feel like it? I know you have to make yourself feel like it, but what do you go through?
Wow. What do you go through when you wake up and you don't feel like it? Well, sometimes, last week, when we were going in off the Easter break, I was coming back in from a big road trip. I was like, man, I can't be bothered. Like, honestly, I've been working real hard for a full on 12 weeks, recording 2 hours a day, then doing the archiving, including all the videos as well as all the audio, and writing out blogs and taking snapshots and la 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 la. You know, all this is a shockingly large amount of work, and I was just totally burnt out. And I was just like, 2 minutes notice, practically. Just American Freedom Radio on the Skype, dudes. I need to take a week off. Please play some reruns. You know, I couldn't even muster up the energy to get some guest hosts or anything of that nature to come in, which is actually good for AFR because they're doing a very similar mode that I do, whereas, you know, you're just busting your ass because you have to, and it's your responsibility, and there's people out there who rely on you to do these certain things. So if I take time off, it means the board op can also take time off, and it's really good for them as well because, man, when you're not rested, you're just not yourself.
That's right. You have to recharge the batteries too. You need to go get inspired, and that means sometimes disconnecting from the computer and all these topics. I mean, we go through that with Red Ice because it's just constantly coming at you. You're researching, you're thinking, it's the emails, it's the guests, it's always something. And so sometimes you just need to disconnect and go to the beach and just get in tune with something else. Leave your body a little bit, and then you come back refreshed and you actually have something to give.
Yeah, definitely. You definitely need to get out into nature, and you know, don't even take your phone. Just get away from the frequencies, the Wi-Fi.
And also, the other element that I want to stress here is that, well, basically, it's stress itself. Because any stress that you go under can be really, really damaging to you, you know, whether that be financial stress, emotional stress, and our jobs, basically, as they are. We're talking about the most stressful and terrifying elements of humanity that have ever really been talked about. And so there's an inordinate amount of stress with that as well. And people wonder, you know, how do you guys deal with it? And the answer for a lot of people is just like, well, man, you do have to detach, okay? You can't be in the center of a maelstrom without being hit by an asteroid or two and needing to take some time off to recharge that and things. And what's funny is every time I take time off, I even when I put it as a headline on my website saying I'm taking the weekend off, I have people messaging me saying, Vinny, I thought you'd been assassinated or that they'd shut you down or something. No, I'm just
conspiracy theorists.
Like, isn't that funny? You know, they become conspiracy theories about why conspiracy theorists take time off.
Yeah.
There's the irony.
See, not everything's a conspiracy, just most
that's right.
Things.
That's right. Have you guys noticed, too, that there's a different feeling out in the air? I don't know if it's people talk about frequency changes or solar changes, magnetic changes, new energy coming in. Are you guys feeling any of that, especially the last few years?
Yeah.
I think 2012
in
was
London
like,
is some darkness going on there. Really, really. Very low vibration going on in London, and there's so many chemtrails over there. I mean, we get quite a lot of chemtrails here. The other morning I was driving to work and the sun was coming up and it looked elongated, which is really weird, and there was no clouds or anything, so you know, I think we are spiraling into a some sort of energy field, definitely.
Well, I think 2012 was a really big year for me. That was the year that I decided that I would stop doing my normal stuff, you know, like stop going out to parties, stop filming stuff that didn't really matter, you know, like dance gigs and things like that, just for a little bit of coin, and just focus completely on exposing scumbaggery and trying to make something happen. It's like 2012, time to stop fracking around was my motto. And when 2012 ended, I was like, so we're not experiencing some massive consciousness shift that suddenly we could all see auras and stuff and we're all holding hands singing Kumbaya. We're not all dead, you know? It was exactly like I thought for a number of years leading up to 2012. It's a massive frickin' psyop, and it'll distract everybody from doing what they really need to do. I understood that start going into the year 2012, so I was just like, okay, I'm not going to fall for the psyop. I'm just going to use the impending doom as an excuse to expand my radio platform as much as humanly possible and help as many people as I possibly can in whatever short amount of time that these people allegedly think that they've got left. And then when 2013 hit, it was as if a massive weight came off my shoulders and things started to speed up like really quickly, like, frick! What month is it? It's already April. Can you believe it?
Yeah, it's fast.
Whoa! Yeah.
The spiral's getting tighter.
Yeah, well, 2012 was never about the end of the world. That just, you know, Hollywood does one movie and everyone thinks that that's what it is. I mean, how many shows between all the alternative researchers? I mean, we covered 2012 pretty deeply and it was not about the end of the world. It's about a, you know, changing times, a different dispensation, a new cycle. Celestially, spiritually, and I definitely pick up on it. I picked up on it before. I was able to, I basically couldn't go out anymore. I went through this period where I was having strange anxiety attacks, even going to the grocery store for some reason. I couldn't drink alcohol, even sugar. So I went through my own little process of elimination. And I think that that's what these energies are doing. They're coming in and they're cutting things out that aren't working for you. It's like evolution is pushing you into a certain direction.
It's all in the eye of the beholder as well, because, you know, me and myself personally, you know, that's how I started 2013, just, you know, happier, healthier, that kind of thing. And then I just started doing really unhealthy stuff again. And I was like, whoa, what the heck is going on here? It's like I lost my mojo or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it happens a lot.
Yeah, it's like people are having severe personality changes, but maybe you're just becoming who you were supposed to be all along. So, and I think it is more difficult for people like us that are sensitive to go out and deal with people. It's very draining. It can be very difficult if you really pick up on things. So it's more of a challenge dealing with it when you are a minority, so to speak, the energy that we're carrying and trying to push on through. It's not easy.
No, it's not. I mean, it's like being, I don't know. We're a did you know that conspiracy theorists are a persecuted minority? You know, think about it. Every single time we open our frickin' mouths in a room full of slaves, somebody will call us a name or a conspiracy theorist. It's like being a black slave back in the day, you know? Every time you walked around, you'd have some white person call you the N-word. And if you're a conspiracy theorist, you go around at any point, you'll have some slave person call you a conspiracy theorist in an insulting way. You know, I personally am proud of the fact that I'm a conspiracy theorist. You know, it's like a conspiracy theorist pride. And, you know, with the raised fist and what have you. And,
well, it's not theory, though. It's right there if people want to do some reading.
Well, it's true. I mean,
pointing out the facts.
What was I listening to? Facts.
Not the theories.
But here's the problem. It doesn't matter how much facts we've got. It doesn't matter how right we are. It doesn't matter how much evidence or documentation we can produce. They'll still call us conspiracy theorists. Even if they've seen the evidence. Even if they know we're right. They still call us that.
Yeah. That's right. And you can notice it in TV shows. They're really starting to use that a lot. Oh, you conspiracy theorist, you know, in like a regular 30-minute sitcom. They are even talking about that. So then everyone relates to that. Oh, that's what that is, you know.
Yeah.
They mentioned the Illuminati in some show, just to sort of put it out there. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched a movie the other night at my mate's place called State of Play. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's got Russell Crowe and Ben Affleck in it. And in one of the scenes, they zoom in to Russell Crowe's apartment, and they're just kind of like doing this camera sweep over the cups on his kitchen bench and stuff like that. And one of them has a Freemasonic compass and square and the G on it. And the thing is, that cup never actually gets used. It's just there, right? In what feature film presentation with $1 million budget just goes, oh, we accidentally put that Freemasonic compass and square cup there?
Yeah, have you seen the Red Ice TV clip we did?
No.
When we were talking about Illuminati, whatever you want to call it, symbolism in Hollywood movies, watch a little clip we put together there. It's just a reel of all the movies that show the pyramid in the eye.
Yeah.
it's quite a bit of them. It's like, who's putting that there?
Yeah, yeah. I'm in the habit of watching stuff and then making sure I watch it on my computer so that if I see something, I can take a screen capture of it. And I must have seen the number 33 a hell of a lot of times, Freemasonic compass and squares all over the time, the Illuminati all-seeing eye with the pyramid and everything. Like, what's it called? Green Lantern, the new Green Lantern film.
Mm-hmm.
They passed this... Oh, what was it? They're going into this deep underground military research facility, and the lady's telling this dude, this is the first alien contact we've ever had, despite what the conspiracy theorists will tell you. And then the dude does this autopsy on this alien, and then he puts all the data onto a hard drive, and then he passes the hard drive to the lady, and it zooms in on the hard drive, and it's got a giant all-seeing eye of the Illuminati with the pyramid on top of it, with pentagrams all surrounding it in a circle.
Yeah, it's funny.
You can't make it up. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Give me a dessert. Oh, you're a dessert, you prick. Give me that dessert. I have a Bloody Mary, yeah, give me a whiskey sour, yeah, give me whatever you got, just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. If you want to know what it's like, you can experience going to New Zealand. It's very simple. Sit in a chair for 19 hours and take your hands and press your head as hard as you can. And don't stop. Don't stop. 19 hours, just like this. And then at the end of 19 hours, you pull your hands off, and you feel like you're in New Zealand. You certainly won't feel like you're home. They say that New Zealand's beautiful, and I don't know, because by the time I got over the jet lag, I had to go.
Well, welcome back.
And it seems to me, if you're going to travel for 19 hours to another country...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. And what's interesting is that the dynamic that we've got here with the English-speaking world is, thank you, Rule Britannia. That's all I'll say. The dominance of the English language all around the world is thanks to, in no small part, our enslavement to the Dutch East India Trading Company. Speaking of the Dutch, the Queen Beatrix of the Dutch... The Beatrix, who plays Dirty Beatrix too, on everybody, who's a Dutch royal shill. Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands apparently is going to be stepping down soon. What does that mean? Well, it means she's going to have some other hereditary dictator take over named Wilhelm. And I'm sure there'll be another great war associated while he protects the sanctity of his left gimpy arm. He doesn't have a left gimpy arm. It's just a World War One reference to the Kaiser Wilhelm II. But anyway.
I'm sure he'll be taking her place in amongst the Bilderbergs.
Now, I've always wanted to open a truther cafe and have a whole lot of, you know, different meals named after conspiracy theories. You know, like for breakfast, you'll have a 9/11 pancake stack with extra hot sauce and or a Twin Tower burger or a Bilderburger. Or an Italian meal like the pasta Lindsay Williams, or a pizza like a Fibonacci pizza or something like that. You know, it'd be great. I think it would be a great cafe to come in, have a nice meal and hang around with other people and actually talk about some things that really freaking matter for a change. And I feel like I'm losing my motivation, right? Like, how long does it take before you've talked about so many different things that you just wonder, I've talked about it. Maybe it's time to do something different. Maybe it's time to do something about it. And I think I'm about at that point where I want to do something more than just doing a radio show and publishing the videos and things like that. Like, want to get into documentaries. I'm making some music at the moment as well. And I don't know. Have you guys ever felt like that?
Of course.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Go on. Sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
I just try and lose myself in making music when I've had enough of all this bombardment of information. I just get the synth out and get lost in music.
You have to think of like the ancient alchemists. They were true Renaissance men. They had their hand in philosophy and science and astrology, a little bit of everything, probably even some fashion. And I think that that's how you have to be. You have to think holistically, and you kind of, once you get into these topics, you open up and you find new avenues that you enjoy or things that you didn't know that you liked, or you feel led to go in a certain direction. And I think it's healthy to do that. I mean, I'm working on a clothing line right now that's organic clothing, but it's also high fashion, so it looks good, because a lot of this organic clothing is pretty hippy dippy, which I don't like.
They seem to be the same styles, don't they?
Yeah, I think it would be good to go into some businesses, you know, amongst the people that are in this all community and support each other.
Yeah,
you know what
definitely.
I'm saying?
Definitely.
It'd be nice to wear something healthy that didn't look like a moth threw up on you.
Yeah. And something that didn't give you a bad rash, you know? Something that wasn't going to give you sexual dysfunction later on the road.
Something that didn't make you look like a history teacher.
And by investing in each other, we keep that wealth out of the banks, and it encourages more people to get involved in, community activities, you know, whether it's setting up a garden, an allotment to grow food or clothes, or making natural soaps and things.
That's right. It's about supporting each other. People have this idea that, money is evil. And it's usually the people that can't make anything themselves and don't produce anything themselves and just suck off of everyone else that says that. There's nothing wrong with money as a means of exchange. And I think that we're coming to a time that it is important to do that within our community. Support the good businesses. Support those who are actually trying to break through and do something, that do good research. Think of how many people download these shows, and if everyone downloaded gave $5, maybe we can help further some kind of research for some new energy device. You know, it won't take much, but it seems like a lot of people have this pessimistic kind of whiny attitude. A lot of these guys, I notice, they're into conspiracy, and it's like, grow up, you know, grow up and be a man.
Yeah. And, one of my friends, he does a lot of speaking around the country and that, and he was saying that when you say it's a donation rather than actually putting a fee on it, the people tend to not want to donate as much as he'd want them to, and I suppose it's about what information we value, isn't it? Would we rather spend money over here? We've got a TV licensing scam operating, so would people rather pay 150 quid to a scam, or would they rather pay somebody 50 quid to give them information that's going to really have a positive effect on their way of life?
Exactly. And you're also enabling the information to get out farther. You know, we have, it's reality. We have bills, you know, and you can't do this kind of content and put together this kind of content and have a full-time job and have a marriage, maybe someone has children. I mean, come on, and you're going to drop dead. I mean, I have no problem being a member and supporting other people who are putting out good information or putting out good products or good books. I have no problem paying for that. Or music, of course, I want to give to those people. We have to get to a point where we're holding those people up and supporting them. I hear people complaining when David Icke charges money at his lectures. I mean, come on, it costs money to get there. It costs money for him to put together these presentations. It doesn't just happen. I mean, it's very naive.
Well, you know, it's a very collectivist mindset, don't you think, that everybody else should do all the work and I should reap all the spoils?
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's not very bright. It's not very awake and aware. You know, some of these so-called enlightened people are just, like I said, they're not generous, they're not kind, they're not giving, but they'll sit around and complain on everyone else all the time.
Yeah, and I'm really grateful for my audience as well, because not only do they donate to me whenever I need it, like whenever I need it, I always get something from the listeners who will be able to take me through the next week or whatever, but also they're not afraid to tell me that I'm wrong. And this is something I wanted to say on the show yesterday, but I forgot about it, is I want to introduce a new section to the show of Tell Vinny He's Wrong, where I'll read out emails from listeners and things like that have shown and proven that what I've said just wasn't true. And I'll be like, oh, my God, I was wrong. Totally. Thank you very much for pointing it out. And that's actually the correct response. That's what you should be doing. I've seen other email tracks from people who will email a radio show host and go, well, this a bit of information wasn't accurate. I didn't like the way that you treated that guest or whatever. It was mean. It was cruel. You were rude to them, etc. And instead of going, hey, you know what? I need to reflect on this a little bit and try and improve my game here, they will reply with threats, swearing, accusations, or telling you that you're not doing enough, you know, that kind of thing, and just putting the burden back on them and not accepting any of their personal responsibility. I don't like that. I really don't like that. I want to do the direct opposite. I want people to critique me left, right, and center for everything that I do. Otherwise, how in the heck would I ever actually realize what I'm doing is wrong?
Of course, and there's a gentle approach to that, and then there's a hostile approach to that. And I hear a lot of hostility out there as well. I mean, we've got a great audience as well, but when I kind of poke around or I I look around at some of these comments, it's like, dear God, you know, who are these people? What kind of life do they have? They're not being kind. They're not thinking about the words that they're speaking to this person and how they're putting them down. They're not thinking about, oh, eventually this energy is going to come back and hit me.
That's true. And there's two elements to it. Like, if somebody's going to criticize you, fine, take the criticism, have a look at it and analyze it. If it happens to be a valid criticism, then by George, you've got to stop doing what you're doing and start doing it a little bit differently, you know, improve yourself, correct that mistake. But if the person's just abusing you and for no reason calling you a nutsack, or something of that nature, then they get blocked. And you never hear from that particular scumbag again.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't... Here's another thing. Here's the irony of it. When somebody insults me, Facebook or Twitter or YouTube comments, for some reason it's the people who insult me that I want to reply to and try to convince otherwise. And the people who compliment me, who say that I'm doing a good job, very rarely receive a reply at all. Am I addicted to putting right douchebags and ignoring good people?
Again, I think this is evolution kind of knocking at your door and you know it, so it kind of bugs you and you're like, oh, what do I have to learn here? What is it that I have to overcome? So you kind of get obsessed with it. It's nitpicking at you and you need to kind of cut your teeth and learn how to deal with these situations better. That's why you're constantly drawn to it. And the thing is, once you learn to deal with it, it just gets more intense and more intense.
The art of discernment.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something that I believe is quite a difficulty, because your social life changes very, very much when you go from the normality, quote-unquote, in society to going on to the conspiracy side of things, metaphysical or quantum physics, and so on and so forth. There's infinitum things out there that people just don't know. And once they do know about them, their social circles completely change. I think I mentioned this yesterday on the show, as I used to have two Facebook accounts, one for personal, you know, and partying type stuff, you know, family or whatever, and my conspiracy theorist one, you know, Guerrilla Media, Mr. News on Facebook. And I think I barely ever check my personal one because this is my life. This is actually what I would rather be doing now. Yeah. Those other things that I believed used to be important to me have sort of fallen by the wayside. Problem being, my family is included in that, or my old friends are included in that. Old business contacts and things like that are included there too. And I've had to recreate my entire life in order to sustain what I'm doing now by only doing what I'm doing now. I think that's what people call a career. Isn't it?
That's right.
You probably enjoyed your week off then.
Well, you know, actually, to be honest, I don't think I took enough time off. I'm still not feeling too great. There's still a lot of, stress and stuff buzzing around in my head. I don't know exactly what it is.
You want to just start listening to the Swami Show? He'll sort you out.
The Watty Show?
Our Friday night show, Meditative Living. You need to do a bit of quiet time. Get to know the inner dude.
The inner dude. that'd be a great course, you know. Pay you $500 for like a 1 day, 12-hour seminar or something. Find the inner dude.
He's calling.
Yeah, be like a men's mentoring tutorage shop or something like that. One more element I wanted to discuss before we go to break, and I think I'd like to discuss it over the next segment as well, is not necessarily just about how much your life changes by going from the, as I mentioned before, the quote-unquote normal world into the conspiracy world, but more to the point how you change and your perceptions of yourself change and actually who you are. And I think that's by learning intricate, really scary things and seeing how you react to them, really that actually tells you a lot more about who you are than just following the same old routine every day with the Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Absolutely. When you put yourself out there and you're at that fear point or that unknown point or even that zero point when you come crashing down, that's when you can really see what you're made of and who you are. That's why it's good to have those experiences as well, but people try and keep that away. They try and distance themselves from that. For instance, when the economy crashed and lots of people lost jobs, that's actually a window of opportunity at that moment to leave a bad karma company, see how and why you were supporting it, and do something new.
Yep,
that's right.
Wake up call.
We'll be right back after the break. No one's gonna take me alive. The time has come to make things right. You and I must fight for our rights. You and I must fight to survive. Welcome back, everybody. The final segment here with my very special guests. Lana, it's very difficult to remember foreign-esque names.
Loctef? That's right. Just remember Loch Ness Monster. It's pretty close.
Loctef.
Yeah, there you go.
Loctef, like the Loch Ness.
Yeah, pretty close, huh? Scotland, Russia.
like Ness.
Clearly the same place.
Right. Your new nickname is Nessie, by the way.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Now, organic clothing, you say. You're designing a little bit of clothing there?
Yeah, I'm Well, I have a mind for it, so I'm looking actually for a couple other new designers to work with to pull it together, but it's actually called Lana's Llama. I love llamas and alpacas as well, so I'm going to incorporate their fiber and make some real high-end sweaters as well, and maybe some hoodies, and then go into other more high-fashion clothing as well. So,
yeah, make them real high-tech, like llama spit-proof or something.
A little edgy, you know, not so conservative, but also tastefully done, so.
Yeah.
Are you going to keep llamas then?
No, I'll have to just go out to the farms and get some of the hair, but it's great because it's all natural fiber, and also there's a lot of natural processes to dye the hair to get the achieved color that you want, and that's the other thing that I'm looking at, trying to get it to be as natural as possible, which is a challenge, but I'm going to find a way. I mean, there's lots of fibers to work with. I mean, hemp, bamboo, flax, silk. I mean, and that's what I do when I go shopping. I try and buy real stuff. You want 100% cotton, you want wool, you want natural fibers all the way. So yeah. It's challenging when you go shopping looking for that, because even right now polyester is even on the runway, high fashion polyester. If you would have told someone that in the 60s, they would have cringed, because it used to be the old ladies wore polyester, the old men, you know, but now it's just invaded everywhere. That's when you have to say, this is a conspiracy. Why, when there's all these wonderful natural fibers to use, why are we using petrol-based clothing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, why are we even using petroleum products really at all? I mean, there's plenty of alternatives out there that are cheaper, more effective, less dangerous. It's a conspiracy. It's just that freaking simple, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I think it's trying to try and get us away from nature. You know, all the iconic influences, trying to, like we were discussing before about the transhuman agenda, that is by using all these plastics, soon they'll have, I suppose they do have RFID chips in like labels, don't they, for like security purposes, obviously, to track it when it's in the shop. And stock control, but eventually with the advent of nano technologies, they'll just have these security things in the in these plastic clothes. Excellent, Lana, for trying to get everybody away from that.
That's right. I'm gonna make it happen.
Excellent.
See, it's gonna make it a lot more interesting when people talk about removing the tags from their clothing.
the tag will be the clothing, though.
I find one thing that might have to work is just some straight out scare tactics, letting people know about how much they're being poisoned, and also educate through the website as well. This is why you want to wear this, you know?
Are you tired of being poisoned and tracked and traced everywhere you go? Are you tired of itchy nuts or sore breasts? Why don't you buy these clothes and fit instead, you moron?
That's perfect. I'll hire you for the voiceover.
See, I've got a gig.
Yeah, but it's crazy. I mean, look at how many guys, sexual dysfunction, it's, you know, they're in their 30s and they're having problems. I mean, something's going on. Women and breast cancer and, ugh.
Oh, you mentioned natural fiber bras. Yeah, that'd be good. Some of that breathes.
Well, there's cotton, but that's it. Cotton, and there's silk already. But yeah, but a lot of the lingerie companies don't do that. They always blend it with something unnatural.
Yeah. See, they fail to realize that there's nothing sexier than llama hair on your nipples.
Yeah. Maybe for you.
Hopefully off the animal.
Yeah.
While still on it.
Llamas are also very special sacred animals. I mean, even one of the glyphs over in Peru is a giant llama.
Yeah, hey, you know, the Dalai Lama. I mean, he's a sacred ass.
Yeah.
Was he actually named after a llama, or is it just like some kind of linguistic coincidence?
You know, I don't know. I haven't looked into it.
I don't know. Maybe you should buy a llama and just call him Delhi.
Sanskrit name, isn't it?
I think it means special friend, though, Dalai Lama, when you translate it to English. Special friend.
A special friend.
Terrible thing. It wasn't he like embracing sort of like the enslavement of the other people in his particular region or whatever? Like there's this serf caste of people that just sort of serve the monks and things like that and live in complete abject poverty while the monks live in this giant palace.
Yeah, definitely. You have that in Buddhism. You have that in Hinduism. The caste system is very real.
Oh, mate. Well, they're freaking enlightened, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. I've been to India and Nepal and those countries. Have you guys been over there?
No, I haven't had a chance yet.
I won't be going back to India anytime soon, I'll say that.
See, I always wanted to go to India because I'm a fan of real hot curry and also a fan of eating with my hands. And apparently they eat hot curry with their hands over there.
Yeah, they do. Right off the floor.
That'll take me back. From my younger teenage days. In the flat in Dunedin. Oh, yeah. There's also another element I wanted to discuss here before we end the show today as well. Is I wanted to get your websites off you and let people know what's coming up on your agenda soon. So, Lana, if you'd like to lead off.
Sure. Well, you can always get to Radio 314 from redicecreations.com. There's a little widget on the side, which you can click into, and then you can see the shows that are upcoming. Next, I'm having Lisa from Tragedy and Hope. I'm looking forward to that. And then I'm also working on, with Henrik, a Red Ice TV episode. Actually, we're going to get into the gender-bending chemical conspiracy. It's a long one, so we're working on that right now. And working on some new music in the background. And my website for that is 30daynotice.com, and that's all spelled out, 30daynotice.com.
All right. Yeah. And Nick, what are you up to, man?
Website is, if you Blog Talk, and you just search for Type 1 Radio Ashram, you can get that on iTunes and things. And also, the Friends of Freeman, friendshipagenda.com. Everybody's welcome there. And you can find all the shows on there. This weekend, we have Thomas Sheridan, Irish artist and speaker and author. He talks about psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's an excellent speaker. And then
he describes most of the people that you meet in your life who employ you.
Yep, definitely. And then next Tuesday we have Ken O'Keefe on, talking about his month-long trip to Iran, which will be very, very interesting. And then we have Sophia Stewart, the lady that authored The Matrix and The Terminator. She's coming on in a couple of weeks. And then there's Retta's show every week on Thursdays and Swami's show on Fridays, all at 9 o'clock GMT. So if you work that out in your own little thing. Music-wise, I'm just working on a slow, dubsteppy stuff. And everybody can still go to Beatport and get the Friendship Agenda album there with lots of tunes with people like Freeman on there and that I've sampled and Freighter X and people like that. Yeah, so.
All right. Any final words of wisdom for the listeners?
Be happy. Enjoy life. Because it's not that long.
And Lana, words of wisdom?
I'd say find the stillness. Try and find the calm place. Everything else is just a whirlwind. It's an illusion, and things will calm down. Just find the still place.
Definitely.
Yeah. And my word of wisdom is try and get yourself into bad situations where you will suffer and feel terrible and things like that. And then when you get over them, you realize, oh my God, I'm actually pretty strong and I'm capable of surviving lots of other situations. And shed your fear of life, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Thank you very much for doing so. And if you are capable of subscribing to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, you can get for $1 a month, $5 a month, $10, $20. I mean, whatever you can afford. If you appreciate the platform that we provide here at American Freedom Radio for people to come on and, you know, even promote their own shows and things like that, I don't care. Just do it. You know, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Down on the left there is a PayPal button. You can either give us a donation or a recurring subscription, which is preferable. And there's even a bank account there as well if you want to set up an automatic payment just to keep the lights on, the heat burning, and the internet chugging along. We'll see you again sometime.